Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Ballaba Girit Bada Dadi. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jai Gopi Janaballabha Girit Bada Dadi. Jai Gopi Janaballabha Girit Bada Dadi. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jayam Shabam Sabadarajika Stood Sisimani Sibhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jayam Shabam Sabadarajika Stood Sisimani Bhakti Siddhanta Sasti Thakur Prabhupada Ki Go Premanandi
Hare Krishna. We are very, very privileged, honored to have with us His Holiness Devamrit Swami Maharaj. I'll give a brief introduction of Maharaj. His Holiness Devamrit Swami Maharaj, born in 1950. At the age of 17, he received a scholarship from Yale University and graduated in 1972. He started reading Srila Prabhupada books after that, and he joined full-time ISKCON in New York in 1973. He got initiation by Srila Prabhupada in January 1974, and then he spent several years traveling throughout the US distributing Srila Prabhupada's literatures, and then went to Bhaktivedanta Book Trust in Los Angeles to assist Srila Prabhupada's book production as a copy editor and later as a chief manager. A few months after Srila Prabhupada's departure from this world in 1977, he embarked upon his international missionary life, and in 1982, officially he accepted the order of sannyas as His Holiness Devamrita Swami Maharaj. For over 3 decades, he has traveled extensively on every continent of the world, sometimes enduring most difficult and trying situations in ISKCON history. A member of ISKCON governing body, he has been chosen by his peers to serve as international vice chairman, then chairman. His extensive current regional responsibilities include down under Australia, New Zealand, as well as northwestern Russia, South Africa, Hawaii, Gita Nagari Farm Project in Pennsylvania. Beyond those areas of spiritual responsibility, he travels far and wide, especially in North America, Europe and India. As an author, he has written Searching for Vedic India and Perfect Escape. One more book, which is a translation of transcription of all his lectures on that title, Bhakti Bhav, is very famous. Many of us greatly benefit from that. Among his myriad services to Krishna and Srila Prabhupada, he focuses upon arranging non-traditional settings for Western audiences to approach bhakti, challenging young Indian students and professionals to penetrate the veil of religious beliefs and religious myths, and advocating spiritually based economics, sustainability and environmentalism. So we are very, very privileged to have such a senior personality of Srila Prabhupada disciples amongst us. Let's welcome His Holiness Devamrita Swami Maharaj by 3 times loudly chanting, Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Hari Bol!
We're going to hear today from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. We are coming up to Gaura Purnima. We have celebrated the appearance day of Srila Dvaita Acharya Prabhu and then Nityananda Prabhu. So we want to understand Krishna, but that is not possible in this age of Kali without going through Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. So we will focus on Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And by the dancing of the Panchatattva, it'll be easier for us to understand Krishna. Sometimes people say, why in India, the land of Krishna, there's so much misunderstanding about Krishna? Is he a demigod? Is he a representation of the impersonal Brahman? Is he the most powerful human being? Is he the Hindu forest love god? Once I was flying on Air India, and they had their magazine, you know, at that time, behind every seat. And there they described Krishna as that, the Hindu forest love god. Why so much confusion about Krishna? It's because people are not approaching Krishna through Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, so much bewilderment. We will take shelter of the lotus feet of the Sri Panchatattva and hear about their effects that indeed make it possible for us to understand Krishna. For me, for you, for the whole world. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Agat Yeka Gatim Natva. Hinata Dika Sadakam. Sri Chaitanyam Likyatesha. Prema Bhakti Vedanyata. Agat Yeka Gatim Natva. Hinata Dika Sadakam. Sri Chaitanyam Likyatesha. Prema Bhakti Vedanyata. Agat Yeka Gatim Natva. Hinata Dika Sadakam. Sri Chaitanyam Likyatesha. Prema Bhakti Vedanyata. Agati of the most fallen. Eka, the only one. Gatim, destination. Natta, after offering obeisances. Hina, inferior. Artha, interest. Adika, greater than that. Sadakam, who can render. Sri Chaitanyam, unto Lord Sri Chaitanya. Likyate is being written. Asya of the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prema, love. Bhakti, devotional service. Vedanyata, magnanimity. Translation. Let me first offer my respectful obeisances unto Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the ultimate goal of life for one bereft of all possessions in this material world, and is the only meaning for one advancing in spiritual life. Thus, let me write about his magnanimous contribution of devotional service in love of God. Purport. A person in the conditioned stage of material existence is in an atmosphere of helplessness. But the conditioned soul, under the illusion of Maya, or the external energy, thinks he is completely protected by his country, society, friendship, and love, not knowing that at the time of death, none of these can save him. The laws of material nature are so strong that none of our material possessions can save us from the cruel hands of death. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is stated, Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadhi Dukha Doshanu Darshanam. One who is actually advancing must always consider the four principles of miserable life, namely birth, death, old age, and disease. One cannot be saved from all these miseries unless he takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is therefore the only shelter for all conditioned souls. An intelligent person, therefore, does not put his faith in any material possessions, but completely takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Such a person is called a Akinjana, or one who does not possess anything in the material world. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is also known as Akinchana Gotra, for he can be achieved by a person who does not put his faith in material possessions. Therefore, for the fully surrendered soul who has no material possessions on which to depend, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the only shelter. Everyone depends upon dharma, religiosity, artha, economic development, kama, sense gratification, and ultimately moksha, salvation. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, due to his magnanimous character, can give more than salvation. Therefore, in this verse, the the words hinata dikasa to come indicate that although by material estimation salvation is of a quality superior to the inferior interests of religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification, above salvation there is the position of devotional service and transcendental love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the bestower of this great benediction. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Prema Pumarta, Premarto Mahan. Love of Godhead is the ultimate benediction for all human beings. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraja Goswami, the author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, therefore first offers his respectful obeisances unto Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu before describing his magnanimity in bestowing love of Godhead. Om Agana Chimadandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chokshun Militam Yena Tasvai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Babu Nithananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sivasati Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Hey Rama 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 Hare Hare. In your life, you want to make progress. Progress means that you have a particular destination in mind. But maybe you have never taken the time to analyze what is the destination you want and what is the destination you're actually getting. In this day and age, there are very few opportunities for deep thought. People are stressed, they're rushed, they're pushed, they're crushed. And it's increasing year by year. So you may wonder, how can spiritual life be possible in such an atmosphere? People don't think where they are headed. They don't think about that. They want to make movement. Yes, you all want movement in your life. Let us move forward. Parents tell their children, move forward, move forward. Educators tell their students, advance, go forward. Politicians tell the people, let us rise up, let us go higher. But no one is analyzing where they are heading. Simply they're focused on, I'm moving, but moving to where? Because people are not able to analyze the destination, their movements are all foolish. And that is a very difficult thing to accept, that all their endeavors are foolish. And then how is it justified? All the artificial moving around, movement, is justified by the need to live. I have to pay the bills. I have to pay the rent, pay for the mortgage, pay for this, pay for that. Family, children. In this way, people are not thinking deeply what is actually going on in their life. Bhakti has nothing against survival. But what are you surviving for? That is the question. Why are you wanting to survive? For what? In the second canto of Bhagavatam, what does Shukadeva Goswami say? Kim pramatasya bahubi parokshaya vairanaya. Shukadeva Goswami says, what's the value of a long life? Oh, I want a long life. Right? None of you want to die when you're 30 or 40, right? But Shukadeva Goswami says, what's the value of a long life wasted by years of inexperience in this world? Better a short life. Ooh, sounds very scary. A short life. How horrible. But he says, better a short life that has just a few moments of bhakti than a long, useless life. So this makes us think, what am I trying to accomplish in this lifetime? What are my goals? I'm moving. Yes, everyone's pushing you to move. Family, society, friends, move, make movement, movement, movement. If you don't make some movement, you'll be criticized. Oh, you're just doing nothing. You're just a bum in the street. Come on, move, move. The politicians, the military, the financiers, everyone is trying to provoke movement. But what is the goal? What is the use in making progress if the goal is not auspicious? So what we're seeing throughout the world today is the results of ignorance. As stated in the first canto, Bhaveshvin Klishyamananam Avijja Kama Karma Bhi. You're making so much activity. But what is the result? The activity is motivated by nescience. I don't understand. And people will even say, why should you understand? Why should you worry about the big questions in life? Don't let that distract you. You want to establish yourself. You want to make money. You want power. You want fame, right? Respect, yes. All the modcons, all the conveniences. That's life. So what is this that Shukadev Goswami is saying? Better a short life that has a few moments of bhakti than a long life wasted. His statement causes us to evaluate what is real progress. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is offering the genuine destination. He's giving you the greatest contribution. Not simply devotional service, but devotional service in love of Krishna. In the most fallen age, the most sublime treasure is being given. This is the paradox we can never forget. Every morning when you wake up, you should be thinking, I'm living in such a paradox, such a contradiction. In the most fallen, degraded times, saturated with ignorance, I have a chance to develop love for Krishna. It shouldn't happen in that way. But because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has broken all of Krishna's rules, and only Krishna can do that, but he does it as Mahaprabhu, he breaks all of Krishna's rules. Throws them out the window. You know, right? In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's very strict. First, come to Brahmabhuta platform. How many of you were like that before coming to bhakti? I know everyone here. Okay. Not me, but everyone here. Brahmabhuta platform, yes? Fully spiritually realized. Brahmabhuta prasanatma. Always fully joyful on the spiritual platform, right? Nasochati, nakangshati. Never lamenting about anything. Never hankering for anything, right? That was you, yes. Samat sarveshu bhuteshu. Okay, many of you were vegetarians, right? Pure veg. Mixed with onions and garlic. Samat sarveshu bhuteshu. Mudbhaktim. Then, Krishna says, you can approach bhakti. So what happened? Why are we having a chance to serve Krishna, but we were not on the Brahmabhuta platform? That is because Krishna comes as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and breaks all of Krishna's own rules. Floods the world with the opportunity to engage in loving service to Krishna. Now, normally, what people think is an appropriate life, and you'll hear this all the time, I'm sure many of you have already heard it, you should be focused fully on family, and then, if you want to be a little more refined and cultured, nationalism is the next step up. Love of your country. So from family concerns, we're not talking about the legitimate family concerns. We're talking about the saturation, the full overdose. The family is everything. The next level up, nationalism. Oh, my nation, my brothers, my sisters are all the citizens of this particular tract of land. I was on the airplane and someone was watching one latest movie from Bollywood. And they had the sound in their earphones turned up. So I could, unfortunately, I could hear part of it before I put my own earphones on and listen to some Hare Krishna Kirtan. So the hero of the movie was saving the country. And he said, "The love of the nation flows in my veins, thicker than my blood." So people are saying, "Oh, yes. Yes, this is very good. This is higher than family attachment. This is sacrifice." But what is beyond that? Some people say, "Oh, this nationalism is not good. It's causing so many problems in the world." True, but that's not the deepest root of the world's problems. But nationalism is causing problems. What's up next? Philanthropy. Humanism. Let us be for all human beings. Let us think of the welfare of all human beings. Then someone can go higher, especially these days. Environmentalism, ecology. Why just human beings? Why are you simply concerned with human beings? This is called speciesism. Nationalism, racism, speciesism. How dare you think that human beings are special? They're just one of so many creatures. So we should be concerned with all creatures. Oh, Bhagavad Gita agrees with that partially. Yes, samasarveshu bhuteshu, be concerned with all creatures, but still know that the human being has a special mission. All right, so we go from family to nationalism to philanthropy, humanitarianism, then environmentalism. Then what's next? Oh, this is all on the material platform. What could be higher? Mystic powers. Let me do some kind of yoga, some kind of austerities, and develop expanded powers for my human life. Or you go another direction. Why simply humanitarianism, environmentalism? I don't want mystic powers. What about the all-pervading spiritual oneness? Brahman, yes! We are all Brahman. Forget all these material designations and just identify yourself as the oneness. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejects all of that. And says, you identify by being the servant of Krishna. Jivera Swarupoi, Krishnaran Chidas. So here is the answer to all the world's problems. Because as long as you just cling to the platform of family, and then nationalism, and then humanitarianism, then environmentalism, ecology, mystic powers, psychic powers, you're on the bodily platform of life. And then even if you understand something of Brahman and have some Brahman experience, you still miss the point. But you become very proud. Ah, I have realized the deficiency in all material identifications. I've won the lottery. I realize I'm Brahman. That solves everything. No, you have been tricked. You have fallen down for the last trap, as Prabhupada calls it, of Maya. You have totally neglected, in the name of spirituality, you have totally neglected that you are Krishna's eternal servant. So this is why this Brahman identification is very tricky, because you feel spiritual, even though you're not doing spiritual activities. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur critiques this. He says that, how dare you think that the spirit soul exists in any way, in the oneness or in duality, without spiritual activities, without spiritual relationships? Where did this notion come from in your head? It's actually a form of arrogance. I am spiritual, that's it. I am Brahman, that's it. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejects all of this, certainly the material identification, and even the quasi, so-called spiritual identification. He rejects that too, so that he can give you the greatest treasure, love of Krishna. In this first verse of the seventh chapter of Adi Lila, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is telling you that if you make Mahaprabhu your only shelter, that's the greatest acquisition in life. Yes, we have to live. We have to take care of the body. If you have a family, you take care of the family. But all those endeavors should be focused on attaining shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who has come into this world to give you everything, the greatest. And what do we say? I have no time. Not now. When I'm 60, 70, then that's the time for spiritual life. Right, young men? When you're 60, 70, yes? Isn't that so? Not now. Now is the time. I hear this all over the world. When I meet overseas students from India, many of them tell me, oh, Swamiji, we appreciate so much your talk. But now, in our age now, it's not the spiritual time. Spiritual time is when you're 60, 70. But now we have to make money. We have to become established. We have to climb the corporate ladder. One father of a student who became a devotee. He's from Delhi. So he was living in Australia and he fell into Lord Chaitanya's trap. So his father heard, what is this? He's chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Ram. That only means one thing. Instantly he'll be a brahmachari. Anyone, that was his notion, anyone whose tongue touches the Hare Krishna mantra, immediately saffron develops. So he told his wife, a wealthy family from Delhi, he told his wife, you please fly over immediately to Australia, investigate what our boy is doing. He's going to that Hare Krishna Hare Ram mandir. Very dangerous. Going to the temple once a year for Janmashtami, fine, we are not against. I go once a year, Janmashtami. I put something in the hundi, fine. But this bhakti immersion, this bhakti lifestyle, is too much. It's kind, he said, it's kind of fanatical, like the Muslims. You can't drink tea, no onions, garlic, no. You please go fly to Australia, investigate. So the wife said to him, well, if I'm going to go to Australia, can I do like I always do while looking at what my son's doing? He said, oh, sure, whatever. You do whatever you like. What does she always do when she would go to Australia? Immediately, casino, gambling. She told me, I always win. Card games, casinos, I always win. So, all right, I'll fly to Australia. I'll go to the Melbourne Casino, world famous, and I will also check after my son. What is this he's doing? So she started observing her son. Ah, what is, he looks so happy. What is this? She started going to the temple. Oh, this is so wonderful. She told me, I think this is better than the casino. So she became a full devotee. Then the father back in Delhi is wondering, what's going on to my family? First my son, now my wife. I will fly there and get to the root of this. So the father comes flying over, and he demands to see me. Swamiji, I'd like to see you. And so his wife and son were there, and they were very nervous. Oh, we hope he doesn't offend the Swami. But he began to explain to me, my boy is at a middle management level in the corporation now. But what will he think of himself if by the time he's 60, he has not? He would gesture with his hand. He must rise on the corporate ladder. He would do that again. So I explained to him, we are not against anyone rising on the corporate ladder. We're not against that. But we simply point out what is the most important thing in life. That's all. So the wife and the son, they were listening and nodding their heads. Yes, 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 yes. But the father, he wouldn't give up. I am so concerned about my boy. His life should be fully dedicated to the corporation. He becomes too spiritual, he'll lose his competitive edge. He has to know how to swim with the sharks. That is success. I looked over at his son, and his son was... So, somehow or other, I calmed the father down. And I said, well, how long are you staying in Australia? I'll stay another 10 days. I said, well, I think you should investigate fully what your wife and son are doing. Yes, Swamiji, that makes sense. I will fully analyze what they're doing and see all the faults. After 10 days, he came to me and said, Swamiji, this is very nice. So now they're all initiated devotees. So we have this idea that my youth is meant for something of material achievement. And you have this illusion that you'll automatically give up that mythology when you get old and then you'll become more spiritual. No, you're making habits now. Life is a habit-forming process. So if you don't put in the time to reform your habits now and develop spiritual habits, it'll be more difficult when you're older. So we need to know, what is progress? I'm making movement in my life. You all want to accomplish something. Whether you're in the ashram or in your home, you want to accomplish something. But what is it that will define the success of your life? I often tell the story, I was talking to an old lady in Japan. The working scene in Japan is more ferocious even than in India. They have, just like in Sanskrit, there are special words that don't translate directly into English, like rasa, dharma, doesn't go into English so nicely. So in Japanese, they have a term called karoshi. And very roughly in English, it means death by overwork. Just one word. Instead of dharma, they have karoshi. So this lady was 65, and she was starting her bhakti practice, chanting, reading Bhagavad Gita. So I was talking to her, and she was telling me about her life. Listen, maybe this can apply to you. Or maybe it will apply to you when you get older. She said, I did all the right things that society demanded. I went to school. I married. While having a family, I worked. I took care of the house while working and raising the children. No time. Oh, so tired. And then my children got married and they had children. So then I had to be a grandmother and look after my children and their children and working too. And then finally at 65, I've retired. Now I have whole free schedule. Children are grown up. Grandchildren are grown up. Retired from work. Now I have time to do whatever I want, the freedom to do whatever I want. But when I pick up Bhagavad Gita and start to turn the pages, it's so wonderful. But after 5 minutes, I fall asleep because my body and mind are so exhausted from a lifetime of hard work. And she began to cry. So she told me, don't let anyone tell you that they should put off their spiritual life until they're old. They don't know what they're talking about. Look at me. I want to read Bhagavad Gita, but my body and mind are so tired from 65 years of nonstop work and social responsibilities. So she was crying. So you don't want this to happen to you? Maybe some of you are fortunate to have been born in families of devotees. Or maybe you were born in a family that became devotees after you were born. But sometimes such children say, oh, we want to experience the world. Yes, we're born in a family of devotees, or our parents became devotees, but that means we never had a chance to taste illusion. In other words, we never had a chance to be demolished, incinerated by Maya. It's amazing all the different ways we can squander, waste our good fortune, isn't it? Spiritual life is for when you get old. Okay, then I was born in a devotee family, parents are devotees, but that means I didn't have a chance to experience the horrors of Kali Yuga. If I experience that, then I'll be stronger in my bhakti. So many excuses all the time. And of course, the parents, they want their children to be a material success. Society is pushing you. Success, success, success. We'll be talking more about that to our young audience tonight. First, I'd like to share with you a personal story, if you don't mind. I was speaking to my mother this morning, yesterday afternoon actually, yesterday, and because of the time difference, it's morning for her. And so my family is very Christian, very firm, one way only. I have to be careful because sometimes they listen to my lectures, so I have to... My brothers have said to me, why are you always talking about us all around the world? Anyway, so I reminded my mother, do you remember what you told me a few years ago? She confided in me something very, I wasn't expecting it. She said to me, son, do you know what I was thinking while you were being conceived? I said, no. I I don't think Indian mothers do this, do they? In the West, it's okay. Yeah, but I said, no, I don't know what you were thinking while I was being conceived. He said, I will tell you. I was praying to God to send me his servant. Wait. So I said, Mother, because she's a very strict Christian, one way only. I said, maybe slightly, partially, a little bit, your prayer could have been fulfilled. Maybe. You prayed for someone who would be a servant of God. Maybe somehow or other, this prayer may have come partially true. She looked at me and she said, but I'm in for Jesus, not Krishna. So what did I say? I said, well, Mother, next time be more specific. His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj told me something very interesting that Prabhupada wrote to him about parents of devotees, Western parents whose children become devotees, and the parents don't have the slightest understanding of what they're doing. Oh, what is my boy doing? So Prabhupada said that at the time of giving up the body for these parents, at their last breath, then they will be able to see the value they're getting that one of their children became a devotee. At their last breath, they'll be able to see it. I told my mother that. I don't know if she was so enthusiastic to hear that. I said, you will understand at your last breath. Otherwise, what she doesn't say to my face, but I know what she's thinking, is, oh, my son, I prayed for a servant of God, and instead, my son is a false prophet. That's the terminology in Christianity, you know. Like, Muslims have a term, what do they call it? Yes, Christianity means false prophet. Not simply an unbeliever, but someone who is propagating an untruth. So these kind of things will always be in the material atmosphere. Misunderstandings. Maybe your family understands, okay, but society doesn't understand. Maybe your society understands, but the world doesn't understand. There's always something. This is why we need to cling so tightly to the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is taking you, as you heard in the purport, beyond dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. This is why it's so difficult to understand Mahaprabhu's contribution unless your eyes are opened up a bit by association with devotees. He takes you beyond all the affairs of this world and gives you shelter at his lotus feet. So we should remember and always meditate upon our special opportunity. We've celebrated Advaitacharya's appearance day. He is the one who calls Mahaprabhu into the world. After he does an environmental scan, he looks around and sees everywhere people are doing punya or papa, pious activity or impious activity, but Bhakti Ganda, I don't see a trace of bhakti anywhere. Of course, nowadays you won't find any punya. You won't find any pious activity. You just find papa, simple activity. But at least during the time of Advaita Acharya, he could see, because he's in Navadvip, which was the center of Nyaya, logic, and learning everything Vedic except the conclusion of the Vedas. So this is why Advaitacharya was so distressed They're expert in everything in Navadvip, the chakra of learning. They know everything except what they're supposed to know. So with loud calls and worshiping Shalagram Shila with Ganga Jal, he cried out for the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He could have done something about it. He's incarnation of Godhead. But he sees himself as the servant of Krishna. And so in the mood of servitorship to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's calling on Mahaprabhu, please rectify this situation. And of course, Mahaprabhu does more than just distribute the Yuga Dharma. He distributes the confidential treasury of love of Krishna. So he's brought into the world by Advaita Acharya. And he's also sent away by Advaita Acharya. When Jagadananda Pandit would visit Navadvipa upon the order of Mahaprabhu, because Mahaprabhu and his associates were in Puri. Mahaprabhu was staying in Puri because, as he told his mother, Puri and Navadvipa are like two rooms in the same house. You'll always get news of me if I stay in Puri. So to further console his mother, because Mahaprabhu is the best devotee of the mother, Matri Bhakta. So he sent Jagadananda Pandit with remnants from Lord Jagannath, Gopavesh, dress as cowherd boy that sometimes Jagannath would wear on special occasions. And Mahaprabhu himself would individually package prasad, Jagannath prasad, for the residents of Navadvipa. This is devotee care done by Mahaprabhu himself. And after carefully packing parcels of prasad, he would give everything to Jagannanda Pandit to take to Navadvipa. And he told him, tell my mother, whenever she offers food, I'm there. I'm always there. So Jagannanda Pandit does that mission. And after a few months, it's time for him to return to Puri. So he asks permission of all the senior Vaishnavas simply to return to Puri. This is something difficult for us to appreciate these days. Why does he have to ask permission? He wants to go, he goes. But Vaishnavas are always seeking blessings and the permission of their seniors. So he, in doing that, he also approached Advaita Acharya. And Advaita Acharya gave him a poem to present to Mahaprabhu. Jagannanda Pandit looked at it, it was written down, and he laughed. We don't know what it said at that point. So then when Jagannanda Pandit arrived in Puri, he presented the poem to Mahaprabhu. No one could understand what it meant, except for Srup Damodar, Mahaprabhu's secretary. But still, Srup Damodar questioned, what is this? What is this? Because he noticed that Mahaprabhu had become silent. What is this message? The message went, tell that supreme madman that here is a message from another madman. Tell him, in the marketplace, there's no more demand for rice. This is Advaita Acharya's signaling that everyone is drowning in ecstatic love of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya's mission has been accomplished. You tell him, Advaita Acharya said, that one madman is saying this to another madman. Everyone is drowning in the ecstasy. They're mad in the ecstasy of love of Krishna. Still, the associates of Mahaprabhu couldn't understand. What is this? And Mahaprabhu said that this is Advaita Acharya. He is such a first-class worshiper of the deity that he calls the deity into the world and then sends the deity away. Shubh Damodar became a little transcendentally morose hearing that. Mahaprabhu said, "This is Advaitacharya. He writes poems that even I can't understand." So after that, Lord Chaitanya's immersion in love of separation, love and separation from Krishna became doubly as intense. So this is Advaitacharya, calls him into the world, and then says, "All right, mission accomplished. You may go to your next universe." And then we've had Nityananda's appearance day. We beg for Nityananda Prabhu to give us the blessings for flooding the world with Krishna Bhakti. When Prabhupada was present, it was very difficult to make devotees in India, believe it or not. But so easy in the West. Now situation is the reverse. India is booming with bhakti. And in most Western countries, there's a struggle. So this is the way of the material world. There's always this way, that way, this, that, the other. In any case, we want to play our part in flooding the whole world with Krishna bhakti. Krishna is for everyone. Now, how is that going to be possible? When you read the first canto, you find chapter 5, verse 11, Prabhupada is criticizing his country. He's saying, because India has failed to spread Bhagavatam all over the world, you see so much hypocrisy, you see so much commotion in the world. So it is up to you all to correct that situation. Bhakti is meant for the whole world. Play your role in that, whether directly or indirectly by support. And in that way, you'll see finally a real change in this world, finally real progress to the real destination. So I can speak for a long time, but you have your time limit. Any questions? Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, your enthusiasm is very contagious. Means seeing you, there is like this enthusiasm. Seeing your enthusiasm, I'm very much personally inspired. So just want to know, like, how can that enthusiasm be obtained?
Realize that Mahaprabhu's mercy is meant for everyone. I was not born in India. You heard about my mother and her vision. So why not the whole world? So while building the glory of India, the real glory of India here, also think about how the whole world can be inundated with Lord Chaitanya's mercy. It is true that people are very bewildered now, very sinful. Many of your brahmacharis were telling me here that the younger generation now, here in India, they're becoming crazy. They have so many dreams and then so many frustrations. The internet pornography is driving them mad. It is very inauspicious. And in the West, it's not that they're going crazy. They've been crazy for a long time. So one place is crazy for ages. Another place is going crazy. So what are we going to do about it? I remember Srila Prabhupada saying something that struck me very deeply. He said that the way a follower of Mahaprabhu sees things is that the more fallen the people are, the greater the opportunity is for service. Prabhupada explained that a Vaishnava is the greatest opportunist. Just like a business person sees opportunities for profit. So a Vaishnava thinks, oh, the people are very fallen. The young generation in India is becoming crazy. In the West, they've already been crazy. What a great opportunity to get Mahaprabhu's mercy. Let me try. So please remember that. Yes.
My question is that actually in initial part of your lecture you are telling about we are running, rushing, pushing everywhere. So even in practice of bhakti also, sometimes there is a chance of not knowing the goal. We might be running, pushing or getting diverted to different things in practice of bhakti also while practicing. So can you please throw some light that how we can be careful to keep the goal and keep approaching the goal without getting diverted to, you know, so many other things.
We want to be the humble servants of the parampara. Just like Prabhupada said, when he was doing his business and his family affairs, he said, I was always meditating on the order of my Guru Maharaj. How would I do it? How would I do it? So yes, so many of you are pushing on family affairs, business affairs, work, but always keep in your heart of hearts the desire to assist the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Always be longing to increase the opportunity. And whatever chance you get, you seize it. And then that is the way to start developing spiritual greed. Just like if someone comes by you with some pizza prasad, you know how to seize it, right? So similarly, any opportunity to serve the mission of Mahaprabhu, you grab it. And that way your enthusiasm will increase. Yes.
Hello.
Yeah.
Prabhuji, since today you brought the context of Advaita Acharya in the discussion, so I have some questions here. The questions I'm asking is only because I have been raised in the faith of Advaitam. And now, after some time, I'm now following this bhakti principle. So I have some questions that haunt me in the inside, that how do I mix these two things up? Okay. So my question here is that, see, at the start of my spiritual life, I have been believing that, means at the start of my spiritual awakening, I have been believing that we constitute of this physical body, which we see, which you can see on mirror. Okay. And inside this physical body, we have our subtle body, which comprises of our thought, of our emotions. Just close our eyes and see what is
inside. Okay, okay, get to the conclusion.
Okay. And then we have causal body, and then we have the main thing, which is known as consciousness. The consciousness, because of which the light to because of which this causal body, this subtle body, and this physical body do exist.
Okay, yes. Right? So far, so good. But the problem is, go on.
Okay. Now, as I move into a car, I don't become car.
Okay. Please, get to the point.
Now, the thing is that, so this is how the principle, and now all I have been taught is that you change your subtle mind to a level, to a purification level, to that extent that you can realize what we really are. So that is the main goal of what I've been taught as an Advaitam. But now when I come to the ISKCON way, I find it is being taught, it is being perceived as Mayabad.
As you think you are spiritual and not in relationship to Krishna, there's a problem. Does a sun, particle of sunlight, a sunbeam, exist on its own without any relation to the sun? The part always exists in relation to the complete whole, the Om Purnam. So, this is the danger of Mayavad, that you think that there is some spiritual perfection attained without any service to Krishna. This is hell.
No, I am not saying that.
But you're asking, so.
Okay. But I'm just wanting to understand that how do I make both this, or can this both work as a complement to each other, or is it like they cannot be complemented, or I have to unlearn these things? And
if you see the impersonalism as a indistinct and lesser phase than Bhagavan realization, just like if you see the sunlight and I'm not seeing the ultimate, the sunlight is coming from the source of the sunlight, so if you see the impersonal Brahman in that way, that's okay.
Okay.
All right?
Okay. But I simply...
Just like someone may know you partially in an indistinct way. Oh, see that man there? That man has a child pushing on him. They know something, right? But do they have intimate knowledge of you? Okay. But still, there's something correct. But if they say, oh, what I see here, this man with a child on his lap, that's all there is to know about him. There's nothing more to be known. That is a big mistake, right? I don't inquire, what's the relationship between the child and him? No, there's just the impersonal Brahman. That's all I see.
Okay.
So understand the phases of the Absolute Truth. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan iti shabhyate. So that is the way you harmonize it. The mistake of the Mayavadis is to say, that's it. There's nothing beyond this impersonal oneness. And then they even go on to offend Krishna. There is no such thing as the spiritual form, activities, and qualities of Krishna. But it's a good imagination for you to gather your meditational powers. They say like that. Portals to Brahman. This is all complete concoction. So you have to distinguish between the concoction and the partial understanding. So you study this chapter 7 of Adi Lila, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Srila Prabhupada said he wrote that especially, he published this chapter 7 first before the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita, because he said it's so important for dealing with Mayavada understanding. So you take that chapter 7, Adi Lila Chaitanya Charitamrita, you study it, and all the problems will be solved. Guaranteed.
Yeah!
Thank you.
All right. So I thank you so much for your kind attention. Hare Krishna. Yeah.
हरे कृष्णा, आइए हम महाराज जी को हृदयपूर्वक धन्यवाद देंगे तीन बार हरि बोल बोलकर. हरि बोल, हरि बोल, हरि. इधर ने देवामृत स्वामी महाराज की.